Blog Talk Radio.
Politics on the Navajo Nation. Politics on the Navajo Nation.
So this is Cal Nez, and you're tuned into Politics on the Navajo Nation. This is a special segment, and we're going to talk about the BHP mine purchase and also the energy policy. We've got headlines out there. It says energy policy, the Navajo Nation president, Finn Shelley applauds deal, BHP passes. And if you look on the internet, there's a lot of coverage out there. I've got two guests this evening on the telephone, and I appreciate the two gentlemen that are on the phone. And I think to give us kind of a quick background of what the show or what this legislation and where it's at, I'd like to ask Mr. Eugene Arthur just to kind of give us a quick overview, and then we'll I'd like to welcome Mr. Russell Begay, the Honorable Council Delegate from Shiprock.
Good evening, Cal.
Yes, sir, gentlemen. I'd like to turn the time over to Mr. Eugene Arthur.
Good evening, Cal, and all the listeners out there on the reservation and onto the show. I'm here to help Cal and bring this issue out to the people out there that are listening in. And it has to do with the energy policy. Ben Shelley gave his State of the Nation address on Monday, and there was an introduction to the Navajo Nation energy policy, and which passed 13-6 in the council. And there was a previous energy policy which was passed in 1986. But some of the items on this new energy policy was a clean coal technology, and it sets policy for exploration, development, sustainable management, and use of energy resources. So that's our subject this evening. I'll go ahead and have Mr. Russell Begay go ahead and say his opinion on what was done at the council's fall session. Go ahead, Mr. Begay.
Oh, yeah. This is Russell Begay from Chipra. The technology that we have today is really an awesome tool, because I'm sitting here in Phoenix waiting for to get some medicine into my body so I can at least function pretty well in our meetings tomorrow all day at the ASU Law School. So, some of the background. During the special session on last Wednesday, the debate was going on the energy policy. And the concern, the primary concern was they needed to bring balance in terms of renewable because the primary emphasis was on coal and oil and gas. So they wanted to, council members wanted to put more emphasis on the use of and development of renewable energy, wind and solar, and then even thermal and some of the others like gas generated electricity, those types of things. And so while amendments were being made, there were a lot of discussion, and of course the sponsors and people supporting it as is did not want to make any changes on it. So while so there was a long discussion on Wednesday morning, this past Wednesday morning, about where we were or where the council was in this discussion of the energy policy. And there were two thoughts. One group of delegates wanted to continue making amendments to it and make it stronger in terms of renewable and also the enforcement of it. So, and the other group were saying, no, it's time to vote on it, is that we go in the chambers, call the meeting to order, and we should immediately go into voting without debating it or without making any more amendments. So we got into the council chamber, and so that was when this came up. That was the discussion was, okay, what do we do? I know some of the delegates wanted to make more amendments, so there was a motion to waive the floor rules to go immediately into making more amendments. And then a discussion pursued in terms of whether we need two-thirds votes or not. And so as we began talking about that, the discussion came all the way around saying, well, we need to go ahead and just vote on it. And the person that made the motion did not get a second because this other discussion was taking place. So he withdrew his motion thinking that that we were going to basically table it and then discuss it further next week. And so when it came back to him, when the council decided to go ahead and vote on it, he was not recognized the second time. Based on our floor rules, he can only be recognized once. So he was already recognized once, and so he couldn't really make a motion. And so the speaker called for immediate vote without any more amendments, any more debate, any more discussion. And there were people wanting to make amendments because we had copies of proposed amendments on our desk ready to be introduced to strengthen the policy and also to really put more emphasis on the use of renewables. So so we went into voting, and because the people that were the council delegates that were wanting to make more amendments were not given that privilege, I voted no because I felt that it was not a finished product, that it could still be strengthened, it could still be more balance could be brought into it. So with that, we voted, and of course, like I said, I voted against it because I didn't think it was fair to the people, to the delegates that wanted to make more amendments, and I think we should have, but we didn't. And so it passed, and today, in front of the chambers, the speaker signed the energy bill, and after signing other bills, we walked across the street to the president's office, and we all gathered there in his conference room, and he signed not only the energy bill but also the $4.1 million that's going to Intec for operations, and also signed the amendment to BHP, our BHP, the mine purchase. And so those three bills he signed, today, and they are now in effect, basically. And so that's what happened. And but there's always that statement that we make, because energy policy is not law. It's not statutory, for example. It's not case law. It's a policy. It gives guidance. So and so the word that we use is that we can always go back and amend it. And so within the next couple of weeks, we'll probably go back, relook at the energy policy, and make more amendments and introduce legislation to make it better than what it is. And the president was hesitant to sign it today, because his concern today in not wanting to sign was, he said, the energy policy, there's a statement in there where the negotiation team will also include a council delegate, our council delegates. And he didn't like that. He felt that the policy, any policy like that, should be debated and developed in the executive branch. And when it's completed and done, then it's sent over to the legislative branch for debate and vote, and then brought back across to the president. So, and the word that he used in his objection was, he said, if you have a council delegate or delegate sitting on the initial discussion on things like energy policy, is that they will intimidate. They will intimidate the people from the executive branch. And so the product will not be what it should be. That was basically his rationale. But in the end, with the media there, all the people there, he went ahead and signed it. So that's kind of a summary of what happened.
Wow. Well, thank you for giving us that information. Of course, all those people listening, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. And we have two guests, Eugene Arthur and Mr. Russell Begay. And we're talking about a BHP mine / energy policy. I guess it's the other way around. But unfortunately, we only have about 2 minutes. I don't know as far as the recorded section of this. And people are welcome to call in still to be able to, to have a discussion that we can continue on this thing. But anyway, so it passed. It's at the president's office, and he's supporting. But what were specifically, with about 2 minutes left to go, what were specifically, what was the biggest issue that the opposing council delegates, as far as the amendments were going to go, what were they concerned about?
Well, like I said, the major concern was they wanted to bring more emphasis on wind and solar. That was the primary, and lesser emphasis on coal and oil, gas, and uranium. So they wanted to minimize that, because they felt there was an overemphasis on the development of coal, and they needed to bring more emphasis on renewables.
So I was reading about on your blog and some of the blogs that are out there, that they wanted to waive the liability. How big of an issue is that?
Okay. Now, that's a whole different issue. That one is the purchase of the mine, BHP. What it is that, and I have it right here in hand, the document, where it says, the Navajo Nation, in its sovereign governmental, regulatory, and proprietary capacity, it says, I hereby release and absolutely forever discharge the other and its affiliates, meaning BHP and the sellers, from and against all EIPA release matters. And what it means is that, one, all claims, all demands, all damages, all indebtedness if they owe money, all liabilities, all obligations, costs, expenses, including attorneys and accountant fees and expenses, action and cause of action of any nature whatsoever, whether now known or unknown, suspected or unsuspected, that any EIP releasing party has, that means BHP, or at any time previously had. So they have something, they have something now, or previously had, or shall or may have in the future, with respect to any of the EIP release parties which arise from or are in any manner related to these. Now, this is the important thing. All of these I just mentioned, the release is from these things. One, the condition of the mind, how the mind is, and that includes such a wide range of things. Management, that impacts the workers, the employees. And so the claims from employees and the management of it. The operation also impacts not only the workers, but also equipment because of the operation. The use of the mine or lease of Navajo mine, the related mine plant lease, and the associated rights of way, the road. That's really huge also. And so those are the main thing that we are releasing, all damages, claims, liabilities, obligation related to what I just said, the condition of the mine, the management of the mine, operation of the mine, use of the mine, or lease of Navajo mine, and the related mine plant lease. So basically, we just release BHP, the owners, from all of these things from the beginning when they started years ago to the present. And if anything arises that's suspected or unsuspected, known or unknown, all of that we've waived. And so basically, as the discussion went, the debate, one of the presenters said, well, we're buying the coal mine, and BHP, they want to walk away from it free and clear, meaning they don't want to owe anything. They want to be looking back behind their shoulder to see if there's something that may come up. They may be sued by some workers. They may be sued by companies. They may be sued by other groups, or if anything happens in respect to these, the condition management, operation, and so forth, is that they will not be liable for it. So basically, we just they walk away free and clear, basically. And the other discussion was made was, they said, well, it's like buying a car. They said, when you buy a car, you assume all responsibility for the vehicle. And nothing, there's no liability to the seller. You know, those kind of statements were being made, and I absolutely, totally disagree with that. And I think BHP and affiliates or any of the sellers should have liability with their operation of the mine, all of these that were mentioned. That's why I introduced an amendment saying that yes, we can have this limited waiver and release only if the BHP or the sellers, EIP participants or parties, is that if they are responsible for any cause for damages and liabilities, all of those at the plant. So in the end, it was voted down, and then the bill was voted on, and it passed. I believe five of us voted against it. The rest voted for it. And so we just basically waived all liabilities at the mine. And BHP, as the presenter said, they wanted to walk away free and clear, and that's what's going to happen.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. So what you're saying, in essence, is that we've got two issues, or these are two totally entirely separate piece of legislation. We have the energy policy and BHP purchase. They're not one and the
right.
same.
That's correct.
Okay. So, how many? What was the vote specifically on that?
On the mine purchase, the amendment to
the
mine agreement. Yeah, five of us voted against it, and I'm not sure how many voted. I think 17 voted, if I remember right. Maybe that's too high, but five I know voted against it, and I'm not sure how many were sitting there. And I just didn't really actually count it. I just know that we were voted down, and that the legislation was voted in and approved. Yeah.
Okay. So so they waive all liability. So it, now that it's passed and it's moving on to the president's office.
Well, the president signed it. Signed it today, so it's now an official document.
What's your what were the people in opposition saying? What was their biggest concern?
Well, like I said, our biggest one, including myself, I think myself and Lorenzo Curley, we were the most vocal in terms of opposing this, because we did not want BHP and its affiliates, the sellers, to walk away free and clear. We wanted them to have to still be liable for anything that they might have done when they start mining it. All of the, I know that they were, like, for example, I guess with agreeing with APS, they were dumping fly ash and covering it, but they stopped. So now all the fly ash is being piled up at APS because they're no longer doing that. So the question is why and what happened? Why did that agreement break? Maybe it was financial, maybe it was something else, or it could be, as some people and environmentalists are saying, is that some of those fly ash could seep into groundwater and eventually make it out into the San Juan River. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are unanswered. That's why I think BHP was smart, in fact, in saying that all the suspected or unsuspected, known or unknown. Now, if you look at companies, coal companies across the world and across the nation, this type of a waiver, you don't see this. This is kind of a rare agreement, actually. Even though some people may say, well, no, this is common, but it's not common between buyers and sellers of coal mines, and there are not that many of them. So, because there's so many issues surrounding coal mines and things that could go wrong, lawsuits that could come about, especially if large numbers of people are impacted health-wise, workers I'm talking about, are maybe people living close to the power plant, is that they could actually bring a class action lawsuit.
So, now, just to be fair to the people who were in favor of it, what was their position?
Well, they felt, of course, jobs is always there. Is that the Navajo Nation needs jobs, and they felt that when we hired the company and we paid them initially, I believe it was $780,000, to do an initial review, and then they gave us a report the end of last year in December, and there they wanted an additional amount of $2.1 million, I believe it was, of which council voted and gave them more money, because they said now that we've reviewed it and we feel that it's a good deal, and now we need to go really study it. And I made a request. I said I'd like to know, but my biggest concern are the seams, coal seams. How much coal do we have? And the quality of the coal. I'd like for you guys to go and study and stand by drilling. But in the end, when they came back, I asked that question. I said, you know, what happened to the coal? How was it looked at? And they said, well, we depended on the data that was collected by BHP. I guess they go out on the field and do regular studies on these things. So they use those figures and those studies to declare that we had plenty of coal for 100 years, available to us. And also Navajo Nation EPA went out and looked at it. But again, my opinion is you have the people that have to study the environmental aspect of coal mine has to be done by people that do it for a living. Our guys, you know, they study everything, buildings, roads, and whatnot. So so they do multiple types of studies, and I think they have limited access, too, also to San Juan power plant across the way, and we've asked, we made a request for that, and it granted, it was granted to us by San Juan, even though it's not part of this. They buy coal from it, but and also, so they have, they do have access, but it's limited. And even though the people will tell us, no, it's wide open, you can come and look, whatever, ask questions, whatnot. And also the in the due diligence team, of course, they went and they studied all of the documents that BHP had. And they went through all of those things. Some of them they could not release to us because they felt that it may be detrimental to the company, so it wasn't shown to us. But most of the most of the documents were given to us. So,
Well, I appreciate that. We also have another caller on the line.
Okay.
Could you identify yourself? Hello, Yate.
Hello.
Hi. How are you? Who are we talking with here?
Hello, I'm Cal and Eugene and Mr. Begay. This is Renee Yellowhorse from Tuba City, Arizona. And and I'm born for Kiani people. Most of them know me for the Save the Confluence issues here in Tuba City. But I wanted to call in and express my appreciation to Russell Begay for voting as he did and the other five council delegates. And that's about it, and finally getting into the radio show, even though it's the recorded portion. But enjoyed listening to the reasoning and the discussion that was going on. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling in. So, caller, if you're still there, so what's your feelings about the BHP? Are you there?
My Renee? Did you have another caller?
No. We're good. Ms. Yeller here, one of the things we're going to, I mean, I'm just basically asking what your opinion on the BHP mine purchase and the waiver of the liability.
I believe that, as Mr. Begay was saying, that there was no due diligence. I mean, they just barely got the due diligence report. And for them to start reviewing it right before they're going to vote on it, it seemed rushed. Everything seemed rushed and not given enough time for the input from the people. I mean, it's going to be the Navajo people's business now, and we're not even allowed to question it or even get an open public forum going on it. Just like Janine Yazzie was saying, what are the expected budget analysis on it? What is going to be the return on investment on it? Our outlook on that. We don't even know that. How could the money be invested for us without us being informed? And I'm a business major, so that's pretty critical for people to know.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you very much for your thoughts. Well, you know, it is a business transaction, no matter how you look at it, whether it's done privately or whether it's done by a government. Business, and how much of this, in terms of liability, would you go, that's almost comparable to buying a car and just saying that you purchased the car as is. And if the wheels fall off tomorrow, you can't take it back. You buy it as is. Now, I think, you know, was it a situation where we could have been given the option to have a chance to take the car back in, so to speak, if there were some issues that were major EPA-related concerns? I guess right now we can't really go back in on it. Mr. Begay.
Yes. Now, one of the things that was mentioned is that if there's something wrong with the EPA portion that's covered by federal laws, then the federal laws would be applied. meaning lawsuit, and